We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Ahoy, Verballers! This is your Captain Ty Hildebrandt alongside Lieutenant Dan Rubenstein. Welcome aboard the College Football Twos Cruise here on the show. Dan, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Ty. I have the zinc oxide, the digital zinc oxide on my nose, because I think are we heading to the tropics?
We are headed to the tropics today, yes.
On today's Twos Cruise, we're heading to the, I guess it all fits together with sort of the South Pacific, with, I mean, I guess we could go with a Lost theme, because that's technically, I think, where the Lost Island was.
We could, actually, that's a theme that we could use at some point in the next couple weeks if we wanted.
Arguably, because you already know the title of the show, or at least part of the title of the show, the idea, the theme behind your idea would actually work really well with Lost.
It really would.
The concept of Lost.
It really would.
What are we doing? Where are we? That kind of idea. But we'll save it. We'll figure something out. It's a long November, and I'm just happy. I've got my floaties packed for the little guy. I've got the zinc oxide, like I mentioned. I'll just rent a boogie board or I'll buy one cheap. I'm ready to, because we've been in the Northeast. We've had squalls. We've had storms. We've had giant Navy cruisers, just very serious nautical elements to the Twos Cruise thus far this season. I'm glad we can mellow out a little bit, enjoy the sun, and really soak into, I hope, more positive theming.
I agree with you, Dan, and I am excited to do tonight's show. If you're just tuning in for the first time, don't forget you can subscribe out on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, any of the usual hotspots if you like podcasting. Don't forget to subscribe to the show for at least the next couple weeks. We're doing 3 shows per week. Mm-hmm. This, of course, being the dumbest among them, our Tuesday recap of what's going on in the world of college football. We also do a preview show on Thursdays and a recap show early on Sundays. You can also follow us along on social media. And if you want to catch some of our old stuff, going out to solidverbal.com. Before we get into it, though, Dan, as is often the case, college football news breaks this time of year shortly after we hit stop on our Sunday recap show.
We only speculated this time.
We did. We tried to cover our bases, and I think we knew to some degree early on Sunday that this was going to be the case, but there was a buyout angle that we weren't sure of. Lo and behold, news did officially come down that Chad Morris has been fired as head football coach at Arkansas. Again, kind of a long time coming. I don't think it catches anyone by surprise. The buyout was large, pretty large, and that, I guess, was sort of the sticking point for a lot of folks. But in the end, they decide to move forward, Dan, and go in a different direction. It's actually along the same lines as what we're discussing here tonight. So it does fit with the theme. But in general, your take on Chad Morris, who I think we were both really excited about when Chad Morris took over at Arkansas, thought that was going to be a pretty good fit and a good hire, but it alas did not work out.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough to know. It's tough. We're not in the interview. He had turned around SMU to a certain degree, certainly not to where they are now, but Sonny Dykes clearly started with a much higher level base than Chad Morris had. So, I saw a quote, I believe, from the AD that second half of Kentucky, that they just looked so far from competitive, that things were not heading in the right direction. And I get it. He was, 4-18, something like that, in his tenure at Arkansas. It wasn't pretty. And so from a big picture, non-monetary standpoint, you understand it. If it's not heading anywhere near a positive direction, a change should be made. But man, buyout money is real, is 100% real. And it's a tough place to win. I understand that there are certain positive aspects about Fayetteville and the ability to attract talent there and the distance to Texas and some changes in the SEC West with Mississippi State and Ole Miss being down like they are, A&M still relatively new under Jimbo. It's a tough place to win given the circumstance, but you'd like to see in year two a little closer, a little more fight, towards the end of games, I guess, outside of the Texas A&M game. So a change there, a tough job. Did you see any of the odds, Ty, for potential replacements?
I perused them very quickly, but did not commit any to memory.
So right now I'm seeing Mike Norvell, who's done a terrific job at Memphis, is the leader in the clubhouse at 2-1. Elijah Drinkwitz, doing a good job at App State, another FBS Power 5 win for App State there. 3-1, Lane Kiffin, FAU, 4-1, Bill Clark, UAB, 5-1, Mike Leach, 6-1. Oh, yeah, that's a little interesting to me. Sonny Dykes, 6-1, seems... It's tough to see them going 2 SMU coaches in a row, but,
sure.
Strange sport. Hugh Freeze at 8-1, Gus Malzahn coming home at 12-1. Bobby Petrino, 18-1, not going to happen. Houston Nutt, 25-1. Why the hell not?
What's interesting about that is they're all offensive-minded guys. And typically, it usually goes the other direction, doesn't it? You hire an offensive guy, doesn't work out, now you go all defense.
Right. And I think the smarter people that are hiring coaches don't try to do that. And I think Bill Clark may be a defensive guy at UAB. I think. I may be wrong. Okay. But yes, outside of Bill Clark, who's obviously done a terrific job in Birmingham, you're right. And I think that's sort of where, you need at least some confidence that you're going to score some points in 2019 football. So I think it's happenstance. Mike Leach he's going to win 8 games pretty much wherever he goes. That's what we know. And winning 8 games at Arkansas right now, you take it.
Oh, so, yeah.
I get it.
The one that cracked me up, the Verballer message that cracked me up was, we know he's got a big buyout. There are 3 million people in the state. If everyone just throws in a few bucks to the hat, we could take care of this lickety split, sure enough. I don't know if they pass the hat around in Arkansas, but lo and behold, they fire him after week 11. The other notable firing that took place previous, of course, to the Chad Morris news was Willie Taggart.
Yeah.
Willie Taggart released from his command at Florida State. And some rumors floating around about who they might target. I'm looking at a website now. Both of the Stoops brothers are on here, both Bob and Mark.
Yeah.
I see James Franklin on there, which doesn't surprise me. Also Mike Norvell, whose name will certainly be a hot commodity. PJ Fleck, Matt Campbell, Gus Malzahn, Odell Haggins, if you want to keep it interesting, the current interim head coach. Are any of these names sticking for you, Dan?
Well, the Bob Stoops rumor news has legs. I've heard from smart people that there is some sort of conversation there. He's the coach GM of the Dallas XFL squad?
Right.
So it's not like he's content being out of football. I think he's happy to be back in the game. He's talked about missing the camaraderie and the guys and the road and stuff like that. Yeah, I saw Josh Heupel there, who's certainly done a pretty good job. Not a great week for him at UCF, though. Dino Babers, real down year. Matt Rule, who may be able to aim higher. We'll see what happens. He's done a terrific job in Waco. I would imagine, if an assistant system analyst job opened up in Sheboygan. I think James Franklin's agent would float him for that. Stoop seems like they'll kick the tires enough if he's serious. I could see it. Otherwise, I don't know. I mean, I guess they could go Mike Norvell. I guess they go Mark Stoops. Mark Stoops has done an underratedly very impressive job. Kentucky is not the easiest place to win football games. And I think he solidified that program in a way that should impress a school looking to do something very similar at scale. Is that what the like millennial companies say?
Sure.
Yeah, at scale. How about that?
At scale. It's interesting to me that two brothers are potentially in the running for this job.
Yeah.
Just find that
Absolutely.
Kind of funny.
Yep.
So we'll see. More to come on that front. Florida State is not a low-profile opening by any stretch. Lord knows there will be other openings that pop up around college football as we continue to go through the rest of the college football season here until its bitter conclusion. But, yeah.
The path right now, by the way, for Florida State, both in terms of recruiting and competition-wise on the field, the ACC is not at a top-heavy place. That is not a controversial statement to make, right?
Correct.
And it's not like Miami and Florida are dominating either on the field or on the recruiting trail in such a way that would scare off somebody. It's not Jimbo. It's not Urban Meyer. It's not Butch Davis. So the Florida State job does have its challenges, both in terms of, I don't think, do they have a football-only facility yet? I don't believe they do. I know that they were promising Willie Taggart that, and that hasn't really gotten off the ground. I could potentially be wrong about that. But I think there's some modernization and organization among the booster class that's still needed in Tallahassee. But otherwise, it's not a terrible path. But you do know if you take that job, that patience is not going to be something that is bestowed upon thee, right?
No.
Okay.
No, of course not.
So that's tough. Get a good buyout like Willie did.
And finally, very quickly, before we get to our games of the evening, Chase Young, the, of course, standout defender for the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Mm-hmm.
He is trying to work his way back onto the field as soon as possible. Now, you know the story by now. He reportedly took a loan from a family friend to fly his girlfriend out to the Rose Bowl, paid the money back, but there is some question about, you know, the I's and the T's here. If it was more than $800, he could be suspended for up to 4 games. And that was sort of the working assumption. But now Ohio State's going to go to bat for him. They're going to see if they can get him reinstated sooner. There are all sorts of other variables at play. But the Chase Young situation remains fluid. It obviously is very consequential. Ohio State's been very good on defense, even outside of Chase Young. But as we talked about on our Sunday recap show, Chase Young may be the single most dominant defender in all of college football. To lose a guy like that, that gravitational force on the defense is sort of a big deal. So keep your eyes open and your ears peeled to hear what might come next in that story.
At the core of it is the definition of family friend. And if Chase Young had a pre-existing relationship with this person from which he took money for girlfriend travel, which doesn't seem like, no star college football player should sweat having to make sure a loved one, be it blood family, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, get to a game. And here we are in 2019, still raising our fingers and saying, well, I don't know about all this. So yeah, hope it all works out for Chase Young. He is just an amazing player to watch. Hope it works out.
All right, Dan, let's get into it. Daniel Moana.
Yeah, you're going to have to explain this to me. I've seen the movie.
Yeah.
But this seems to be a passion of yours that I was not ready for. So we wanted to be more pop culture-y with this week's Two's Cruise.
Well, it's a Two's Cruise. So everything is nautically, is oceanically. Is that a word?
Yeah. No, themed? Definitely not. But for ours, it is. Yeah, for our show.
Disney made a movie back in 2016.
Yes.
Titled Moana.
Maybe. Oh. Okay.
And in that movie, Moana is a teenage girl. She lives on a Polynesian island. Her people have been trapped on the island for a millennium, Dan.
Mm.
Because they're afraid to venture out into the open sea, mostly because The Rock's character was a dick. Full disclosure.
Yeah.
But they're a seafaring people. That's what they do. It's part of their heritage. And Moana, this teenage girl, she's drawn to the water. There's this very, very emotional scene where she talks about, she's drawn to the water. She can't explain it.
Yeah.
It just speaks to her.
Right. Does it speak to you?
Within the context.
Do you feel like you've been too landlocked?
Within the context of the Two's Cruise, of course it does.
Okay. I mean, what about your life? Do you feel like, so you just got to break out of PA? Got to get to Copenhagen? Tokyo?
I'm okay.
Barcelona?
I'm okay not going to Copenhagen. I'm good.
What?
I'm good. No disrespect to Copenhagen.
Yeah, that's Copenhagen disrespect.
I'm less landlocked than most of the people listening to the show. How about that?
Okay. I understand. So she, the water speaks to her. The travel speaks to her.
The water speaks to her. The travel speaks to her. I'm not going to give away what happens in the end, but instead of being landlocked and not going out in the open seas, she decides she's going to make a run for it. She finds out she's a natural out there. She basically saves the future of the Pacific Ocean. It's a heartfelt story, okay?
So was this particularly... you don't have kids.
No.
You are not an animator. You are not a diehard Disney person.
I have nieces and nephews.
Okay, so you've seen it and it touched you.
It did. It touched me deep inside.
Okay.
So what we're doing today, Dan...
Mm-hmm.
We are looking at college football programs through that lens, and we're saying, all right, who's been staring at the edge of the water for too long?
Okay.
Who's been there? Who's been on the edge? They're staring at the water. They don't know why. And who is enticed by that distant line, the horizon, where the sky meets the sea? Who wants to try and push forward? Which programs, Dan, should make that drastic change, should make a run for it? Which programs should channel that inner Moana, and which programs might already be on the right path? And you just need to be patient.
Do you have a name for this game? Because I have some ideas.
This game is titled I Am Moana.
Okay. Can I pitch you?
No, because here's why.
Okay.
There is an SEO? Important... There is no, SEO is very important, as you know.
Yeah, all those crossover college football and Moana fans. B-plus Disney movie fans, yeah.
Here is the wrinkle that I did not write in our shared Google Doc.
Okay.
The wrinkle here is, as we go through, we've got 10 teams listed.
Mm-hmm.
If you find one that you feel needs to push the envelope, needs to sail the open seas, after you describe the situation, why you feel the way you do, you must yell at the top of your lungs, I am Moana.
I have to?
You have to. Like, I have the sound here. I am Moana. You have to do that.
This is out there even for you, Ty.
You have to do that.
Okay. My only wrinkle, that's fine. I'll do it. It's your game. My only wrinkle was saying, just to bring it to college football, if SEO is not an issue for this crossover, can we call it something Moana-ish, but bringing it to college football, perhaps with a team who has looked to the edge of the water and said, I need to make a change in my life, and honor a team who has succeeded looking to the edge of the water. I thought of a couple of ideas. You just tell me what you think, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
At first, I thought Mario Cristoana, right?
It's a little. I mean, it's not bad.
It's a lot. It's a lot of syllables, right?
But they didn't look to the water with Mario Cristobal. They looked to the water with Chip Kelly.
He was already there. Yeah. Right. Dave Doana? No, I'm not loving it. Especially because NC State is having a not super fun year.
0-2.
Mike Boboana, not bad because it sounds fun, but it hasn't been a last good couple years for Colorado State. So I'm moving past that. Now you talk about the Pacific Island element.
How much time did you spend with this?
This is 45 to 50 minutes of my morning.
That's what I figured. Continue.
Nick Roloana, because of the Hawaii connection, I'm not there, Ty.
No.
But we're talking about a successful story, somebody taking a chance, somebody going for something loud, involving some barrel chestiness, like the Rock's character in Moana. Can we call it Duck Coach Oana? Can we call it Duck Coach Oana? Or Ed Oana?
I'm going to name, it's not bad. Of all the ones you've given, it's not bad.
That doesn't mean
it's good.
It's the best.
I am going to title this one, The Two's Cruise, I Am Moana, but...
Duck Coach Oana.
But that's not bad.
Okay. Let's start off. First team that you think needs to be looking to the horizon and figure out where they stand and what they want to do.
Dan, where do we stand on Michigan State? Michigan State's had a longtime coach. They like him. Their AD has basically gone to bat for him. But we're now in this cycle, a couple years running, where we talked to plenty of Michigan State fans. They're all underwhelmed by the offense, with the exception of Brian Lewerke's first year as a starting quarterback, where he seemed to be showing promise. Things have, I don't know, treaded water would be putting it nicely.
So, no, they've treaded water as a bad offense. They were bad, and they've stayed bad.
Where do we stand on Michigan State in terms of a college football program at this point?
I think they need to move on all over. And I know the possibility of that seems slim, given all of the changes atop Michigan State administratively. But at this point, Mark D'Antonio is a historically important coach for Michigan State, has led them to incredible success over the past decade. But he seems too stubborn for the long-term success for the program right now, as it, you know, just in terms of what the offense does or doesn't do and evaluation of players coming into the program. Done great things defensively. They have never missed a beat losing defensive coordinators, it seems, but I don't know. It's grown stale to me. It's, you know, Alabama broke them in the playoff. You look at what they were doing on offense before then, and since then, they were involved in a shootout with Baylor in a major bowl game.
No.
It's a 42-41 game. They came back down 20 in the fourth quarter. Could you imagine the tiniest possibility of that ever happening against a decent team? Michigan State coming back from three touchdowns down in the fourth quarter. It seems like fiction. And it was, what, 4 years ago?
Yeah.
When you go that deep down the, I don't know, the sinkhole of college football offensive possibilities, it just feels like let's scrap it and do.
Well, they're not coming back for three touchdowns. They're letting other teams do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
We saw it this past weekend when Illinois won over Michigan State, which no doubt was not something received very well by the Michigan State faithful. The thing that I've heard a lot through emails and just reading around on Twitter is people who point to what happened at LSU, and they say,
Coach Oana.
Yeah, as I Coach said. Oana, he revamped the offense. He acknowledged this needs to get better. He made a very concerted effort to do so, and lo and behold, might be the best offense in college football right now. So that's clearly an extreme example, but it is proof positive about a situation where you've historically had a good defense and the offense needs a bit of a reboot. They were able to pull it off. So I think I'm with you. I think it is time to move on. I was texting you that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That I don't know if this situation is tenable. They're certainly not going to get better by shuffling the deck on the coaching front the way they did this past offseason. So I'm with you, Dan.
I've been staring at the water. Isn't that something like
no,
that?
No, you have to yell. You don't have to yell, but you have to say, I am Moana.
So I am Moana honors what? That they need to jump and do something new?
Yes.
I am Moana.
I am Moana, yes. I am Moana. See, now, doesn't it feel good? Don't you feel inspired?
I feel good. I feel pretty good. I feel pretty inspired. I just know that this game is either going to drive people away from the show forever or endear us to such a crazy degree during car rides with their children that I don't know where I stand. So I just figure, let's keep doing it.
You know my hit rate.
Yeah.
It's either all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on.
You got Billy Ashley to you.
Let's go to the Pac-12.
Okay.
USC.
Mm-hmm.
USC. Now, we've been talking about this opening since Clay Helton got there.
Yeah.
This is not a new conversation. Didn't have to do a whole lot of studying on this USC one to know how I feel about it. I think Clay Helton's a nice guy. I think Clay Helton's a good coach. I still contend.
There's going to be so much people. There are going to be so many people talking about how nice Clay Helton is in the next 2 months.
Oh, for sure. And I stand by something you said years ago, that if you saw Clay Helton in the airport at a Hudson News, you wouldn't even know he was a coach of the USC Trojans.
Right.
Not a recognizable guy. It doesn't mean he can't be a good football coach, but
right.
I think if you're USC with all your tradition, with your built-in recruiting advantages, you got to be more than just a good football coach. You have to be able to develop talent, in the time that we've seen Clay Helton there, albeit with some injuries this year, mm-hmm. that talent development component has been missing.
Okay.
It does not feel like the program has elevated at all in his tenure. And
I mean, he's won the Pac-12.
He's won the Pac-12, but I think the expectation as a USC fan is to do more than just win the Pac-12. It's to get to the playoff. It's
is that
to contend
his fault?
On some level.
Okay. I don't think you're wrong, but it's just, it's curious.
On some level, he certainly bears some responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who the answer is, but I don't know if Clay Helton was ever it. So I am Moana.
I mean, he's gone.
I think he's got to be, right?
I think he's just gone. And I mean, I think they have the 11th best recruiting class in the Pac-12. I think the word is out.
Yeah.
Nothing I can say is going to change much here. He's gone. And I am Moana.
Let's stay in the Pac-12.
Yeah. New AD. Yeah.
What about Stanford, Dan?
Okay, so Stanford is interesting. They've had a ton of injuries. They've, when healthy, have been okay sometimes, but they're losing to teams that even beat up they shouldn't be losing to. Something interesting to me about Stanford, though, is they fired their longtime strength and conditioning coach. And that was in, I don't know, it was over the summer or in the spring, but he was there. He was a Harbaugh guy, I believe, from 2006, or he came in with Harbaugh around that time. So, as people know who are diehard college football fans, there is a significant amount of time spent with the strength and conditioning coach. And I know I think he took over all of Stanford athletic strength and conditioning. So that changed a little bit and there was an incident or he was reported to have done something. The details to me are hazy. I just saw a report from the Stanford Rivals site, but he was let go. And that's a more major change than I think we acknowledge. Just the day-to-day in the off-season and making sure players are treated correctly and are training correctly. I don't know if it's led to more injuries for Stanford, but it's a different program. And Stanford hasn't been able to count on, one, health, and two, those home run hitters. Bryce Love, Christian McCaffrey, really top-level quarterbacks, which KJ Costello is sometimes, but they've been built across the board at such a high level. And you look at them now, and their dude factor is dwindling. So they continue to recruit well. I think there needs to be, cleaning house is probably too dramatic a term for what needs to happen, but I think a long look in the mirror is needed. Maybe hiring a new coordinator or two, and I think most of all, figuring out strength and conditioning, really investing there if they're not already, because something is amiss.
Yeah. And it feels so awkward to say that, to be honest.
Yeah.
When we talk about Stanford football, this is a coach in David Shaw who's won double-digit games a bunch of times here. I'm trying to count up quick, at least five times, factoring in the full season, not just the regular season. 9 wins each of the last 2 years, 10 wins back in 2016. So it's still a successful program.
And he's earned the benefit of the doubt, David Shaw.
Oh, for sure.
To have a down year, it's expected.
For sure. But it just, again, feels like there is more to tap into there in the Stanford football program, just given the fact that they were there. This is a team mm-hmm. that's won the Rose Bowl a couple times now in the last sure. 10 years. Clearly, they can be good enough to get to that level. I don't think I wouldn't want to push my inner Moana here. I think David Shaw is the right guy for that job. I think he's smart enough to know that some things need to be tweaked. I wouldn't want to change too much at Stanford, because before the Jim Harbaugh era, this is a program that had been down for quite some time. You got to go back to Ty Willingham in the early 2000s, really just that 1 year in 2001 before you get to a really successful Stanford campaign pre-Harbaugh. So for me, I think you stay put. I think you stay on the island.
Oh, you don't get rid of David Shaw.
You don't get rid
sure.
of David Shaw. Yeah.
No. I just, what changes are needed for Stanford? Like, David Shaw is notoriously very conservative on offense in terms of punting and timeouts and how aggressive he is at different moments in the game. I don't know if it's, I know he has a young offensive coordinator. I just think Stanford needs to do what all older people need to do with their routers. Don't freak out. Just reset. It'll be okay.
Don't freak out. Reboot. Just reset. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Thank you.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
What about the Northwestern Wildcats, Dan?
Freak out. they need to hire a new offensive coordinator and probably a new offensive staff.
Yeah, just it?
I think so.
You're okay with Pat Fitzgerald?
I'm definitely okay with Pat Fitzgerald. I'm all aboard the Pat Fitzgerald Express, but it's another one of those instances where good, smart programs try to stay ahead of the curve, or they see where the sport is going. And Northwestern doesn't. I mean, even like last week, I don't know if you saw this quote of his where he talked about having visitors at Northwestern practice.
Oh, I did.
They were surprised. They thought they were watching like an undefeated team. Like, no, dude. No. And so it's that at least public self-awareness where you're just like, maybe internally, I think Pat Fitzgerald's a smart dude. I think changes are coming, but there is a part of me that worries about him being the like rock solid, stay the course. We trust our guys to get work done and we're going to figure it out in the off. No, this offense needs to go in an entirely different dramatic direction because they just can't waste defenses year over year. You can't do it. Somebody's going to figure out how to at least not embarrass yourself at Northwestern in the way that they have this year.
Yeah, and I mean, Northwestern's in the same boat as Stanford in many regards because of the academic requirements there. It's not always the easiest place to recruit, too.
No.
And Pat Fitzgerald's been head football coach since 2006. In his previous 13 seasons, he's qualified for a bowl game 9 times. That is not insignificant.
Perfect.
That is not insignificant at all. At Northwestern, and I don't know who else you'd get who could do that. It's a tough job, tough nut to crack. So sure. I don't think you part ways with Pat Fitzgerald, but I think we say they got to figure
something.
Yeah, they got to figure out something on the offensive side of the ball to be a little bit more consistent. When you have talent like Hunter Johnson coming in, he transfers over. Now, maybe he always was going to underwhelm, regardless of where he was. Maybe that's why he wasn't starting quarterback at Clemson. Who knows? But I got to believe a 5-star prospect is better than what we saw this year at Northwestern. I just got to believe that to my core.
And if you're able to put together year over year and hire and maintain this defensive coaching staff, which, by the way, your fund analytics stuff, they haven't not fielded a top 50 defense since 2011 in points per drive allowed, no garbage time. Their defenses these past few years, 22nd, 16th, 28th, 6th, 38th, 49th, 42nd.
Yeah.
Like he knows what good coaching looks like. He knows what good game planning looks like. He knows what good fundamentals look like. You need to go out and find somebody to do it on the other side of the ball. It's time.
So am I hearing I am Moana here?
I am Moana.
That was good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's move to the exact opposite end of the good old US of A.
Okay.
I guess it's not the
Galveston.
I guess it's not the exact opposite. I was thinking Stanford. Where I'm trying to go with this is South Carolina.
Where we're going is not the opposite side.
So South Carolina, Dan, has been under the tutelage of Will Muschamp a couple years running now. Mm-hmm. I remember a lot of the preseason fodder, Will Muschamp getting his boys fired up, trying to get them to believe, why not us? Why not now? And a shock the world, all the usual rhetoric that you hear from coaches trying to fire up their boys.
Yeah.
Has not come to fruition, though. They did beat Georgia. And that was sort of a big deal. It's been difficult this season because Jake Bentley, their starting quarterback, went down very early. They've been forced to deal with the aftermath of that. Ryan Helinski got a start. Some others have played here and there. But, you know, offense was kind of the area that Will Muschamp's always been tasked with trying to solve. He's had a hard time with that. I am mixed on how I feel here. And I think back to when this position opened to begin with. At the time, South Carolina seemingly made an early move to throw their hat in the Tom Herman ring. It didn't work out. Tom Herman went elsewhere. Right. They end up with Will Muschamp. He was one of the last guys hired in that coaching cycle.
I think they went after Rich Rod as well. They were really going for it.
They were. They were. They were trying to channel that inner Moana, and they ended up with Will Muschamp.
Right.
So now the question is, do they try to channel their inner Moana again and go a different direction? Or are they okay standing pat with Will Muschamp and with what he's built so far in a couple years in Columbia?
So it's a seesaw program. Anytime their offense gets a little bit better, their defense is hurt and struggles. Anytime their defense is totally fine, like they are this year, their offense has run aground. Nautical term, Ty. Nautical term. So in the past 3 weeks, I don't remember if they had a bye, but they went scoreless in a loss after being up at halftime to Tennessee on the road, but still Tennessee. And then they lose to App State at home. Sunbelt App State, good Sunbelt team. It's in Columbia. You got to win that game. That's just, it's unacceptable this many years into a tenure to be losing that game. And I know I'm pro App State. I think it's a great story that Eli Drinkwitz in his first season has beaten North Carolina and South Carolina. And it's cool that they somehow managed to pull out that Georgia game despite every metric and every number saying, well, if it weren't for turnovers, all those dang turnovers, I would have gotten away with it. But I don't know what you do here. He hired Kurt Roper initially as an offensive coordinator. And that, to me, it tells me that he's not progressive enough at hiring coaches, at thinking about offense. I know they went to like a hurry up, no huddle. I know Jake Bentley got hurt almost immediately this season, but I don't know how much leeway you give the dude if he has this time to recruit and put in the coaches he wants to put in, if that's the case, and you're losing these games. Again, understand the Jake Bentley factor, excuse me. But losing to Mizzou now by 20, that hasn't aged super well, Ty.
Yep.
Has it?
No. Losing to App State? Even though App State's a really good team, South Carolina should be better than that, don't you think?
Right. So I saw his buyout something like $19 million. And it's hard to see it happening this year, but I suppose I could see a change of coordinators, overhaul things, no actual good coordinator going to Columbia because they can see the writing on the wall, and we have another like 5-7 year.
Well, it's shaping up to be that kind of season. Right now, this is a team that's got, what, 6 losses? And they've got a road tilt against Texas A&M this coming week, which is not the easiest, I think, given
Palmetto Bowl,
where South Carolina's at. And then they've got Clemson, final week of the year, at home, but still Clemson. Mm-hmm. Well, Muschamp's gone to a bowl each of his first 3 seasons in Columbia. I don't think he's going to qualify for one this year. He's had the injuries, but I after his second year, after the 2017 year when they won 9 games, won the Outback Bowl against Michigan, that to me was a reason for optimism headed into 2018. Like, okay, maybe they're building something here. And there was optimism after, I'd say, the end of last season too, that this could be okay. We might be building towards something in 2019. That feels like it went out the window a long time ago. And I just don't know if we've gotten to a point where anyone's going to feel differently that this isn't just a program treading water. Like, it just doesn't feel like anything's building. So I say, let's move. I am Moana. Let's channel it. See where
I'm not quite
go.
There because of the buyout. I am not Moana. That's just too much money to pay Will Muschamp to go away. It is.
Somebody please isolate you saying, I am not Moana.
Okay. I am not Moana. I am not. I repeat, not Moana.
What about Auburn, Dan?
What about them?
It seems like they're asking in earnest whether or not they are Moana every year. And it's a program this year that you know well. Your Oregon Ducks lost to them week 1.
Mm-hmm.
program that is, I think, a top 15 team right now.
Mm-hmm.
Offensively, they've got a true freshman quarterback that I think they're excited about. He has had some freshman moments, to say the least, but offensively, they have not quite been the same that we saw in some of the earlier Malzahn-led Auburn squads, but still been very good on defense, still have recruited very, very well. Mm-hmm. So the question is, does Auburn going in a different direction actually get them above Alabama? Now maybe above LSU, because that's the perennial question in the SEC West. It's not so
Chad
much.
Chad Morris available.
Yeah, Chad Morris available.
Willie Taggart right there.
Veteran SEC West coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
The question remains, not so much can you win 10 games, but can you beat Alabama? And that is the dilemma, I think, if you're Auburn right now, as it has been truly for pretty much every team in the SEC.
Auburn can beat Alabama. Alabama's beatable. We just saw it happen.
Yeah.
By a better team, probably. But, like, how many points did LSU beat Auburn by? 3? It's a close game at the end. We're
but you
not
get
talking about Auburn and LSU on different tiers, on different levels in any sort of dramatic way, are we?
No, but you get my point. My point is that in the span that Saban has been at Alabama, literally every other program in the SEC has changed coaches trying to get to that level.
Right.
And few have done it. Maybe LSU's finally getting there. Maybe Georgia's trying to build towards something. Florida over in the East, who knows? But Auburn is a team that has beaten Alabama. And yeah. I think they're trying to get
multiple
to that. Multiple times. They're trying to get to that level of consistency where they can do it more frequently, or at least be viewed as the front runner, legit front runner.
I don't
in the
understand
SEC
what
West.
You're asking, though. You're asking, does Auburn think
my question
that they can
is
find a coach that can beat Alabama 4 out of 5 years with Nick Saban?
My point here is that Nick Saban has driven everybody crazy in the SEC.
Sure.
He's driven everybody crazy. And every year we hear the rumors about Gus Malzahn maybe on his last leg, coaching hot seats, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Is it warranted? Would they be better off moving on without him?
No. I mean, if they hire Urban Meyer or something, maybe, but I don't think that's locked up. I don't think they're better off without him. It's whether Gus Malzahn is better off without Auburn, having to deal with all the noise constantly.
He seems like he's bottling up a lot of stress.
Yeah. Oh, he's got like the Ned Flanders, you know, when he was spanked 10 bajillion times as a kid and represses all of his angst and then it all comes out. There's a little bit of that to Gus Malzahn for sure, but their defense is incredible. They're starting a true freshman who I think is okay. I don't, you know, he's not a world beater, at least right now, but Auburn's in a pretty good place. I mean, if LSU's the number one team in the country, they took him to the wire in Baton Rouge. They lose to a Florida team basically because Florida decided to run it for 3 plays or something like that and take advantage, obviously, of some freshman mistakes from Bo Nix. But the Oregon win looks better. Looks worse for Oregon, just that they're able to beat teams in a more organized way now. But I am not Moana with the idea that you can just move on from Gus Malzahn and start dominating the Iron Bowl. No, I'm not there.
Do we know if it's Malzahn or Malzahn?
Moro.
Because
when you said Will Muschamp, I wanted to go Will Muschamp.
Because I know Kirk Herbstreit is squarely on the Malzahn side of the fence.
Is that true?
Every time he says it, it's Malzahn.
I haven't watched game day this year. I don't know.
I'm a big Malzahn guy. I'm from Eastern PA. You know how it is.
That's true. Mario.
Mario.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you. It's a question of who would you get? Who would you rather be your head football coach? Everyone wants Urban Meyer. Everyone wants Bob Stoops. Like these big names from years past. Everyone wants those guys. And I get it, but
right,
it's hard. It's hard to lure those guys in. It's hard to start from square one with any coach in the SEC West. It's a tough conference. And Malzahn's been there. He's had a lot of success in the past. Maybe it hasn't been as frequent as Auburn fans would like, but recruiting is still pretty strong. I think he's fielded enough of a good offense in terms of just his general resume that starting a true freshman quarterback gives him some wiggle room. So I'm content to leave him there, make necessary tweaks, but not anything drastic. Keep the ship going in the right direction.
So we're decidedly both not Moana.
We are not Moana here now.
Next.
What about Oklahoma State?
Okay, so Oklahoma State in a bit of a changing year, starting a redshirt freshman at quarterback, bringing a new offensive coordinator from the Ivy League. They have a standout at running back, a game-changing home run hitter type at running back, suffer a significant loss to their number one receiver, and still look like they could be in a decent enough position. I want to verify by bringing up their schedule. They go 8-4, couldn't they?
Yeah, sure.
In a changing year. They appear to be competitive in most, if not all, of the games they play. And now losing the way they did to, I think it was Baylor, they lost comfortably. It was back and forth for a good chunk. But that's not great, because that was in Stillwater. They had a shot against Texas, losing at Lubbock. And I think Texas Tech is interesting this year. But no, I don't think, I couldn't imagine. Why, this is Oklahoma State. 8-4 is fine if it's a down year. They finish with what? They have Bedlam, but they also have Kansas and West Virginia, two teams that can be pretty horrific. No, I'm not freaking out. I don't think there's an emergency in Stillwater right now.
I think it'd be more likely that somebody would hire Mike Gundy away than
really?
Oklahoma State would. Yeah, Mike Gundy's always got his name in the ring for something.
Yeah, I mean,
his name comes up pretty
there.
Often.
There's been tension that's supposedly been smoothed over. Obviously, T-Boone no longer with us, so that is not a thing. But, yeah, I think they're fine. I think they, once healthy, once Spencer Sanders gets a little more seasoning, they'll be fine.
Mike Gundy has...
This is not an overwhelming Big 12 at the time.
No. Mike Gundy has coached at Oklahoma State. This is his 15th year, but in the 14 previous seasons... Yeah. He has made a bowl game 13 times. That is remarkable consistency.
But there should be a higher bar than that at this point.
I would agree.
Yeah, they should not be losing more than 4 times.
I would agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with you. He's won a bunch of double digits in there.
Yeah.
Double digit seasons in there. But I don't know who you go to do better than that. That's a high bar to clear if you're going to try and
Littrell.
Go.
There are guys.
There are guys, but 13 of 14 previous seasons qualifying for a bowl is a high bar. It's tough to do better than that. So,
oh, I don't think it's a high bar at this point.
Yeah, it's a tough bar, man.
For Oklahoma State?
They're either winning 10 really games or they're winning like 7 or 8.
Yeah, but not many people win double-digit games multiple times in short periods.
So you want to move on?
No, I'm saying he set a really impressive bar, and there's no reason to think that somebody else can themselves set an impressive bar.
So we're disagreeing on the bar, but not on the fact that neither one of us is Moana.
Yeah, they should be winning 8.5-9 games a year. This is bowl is 6.
All right.
I'm not impressed by 6 at Oklahoma State anymore.
I think I agree that I'm not channeling inner Moana here.
No Moana here. Come on.
What about Texas?
Texas is an interesting question. The offense has been very good this year, and especially I've been impressed by the emergence and progress in the run game, that they've been able to lean on Keonta Ingram and not just Sam Ellinger for everything. I like the receivers. The line has been pretty good. I know that nobody actually loves their offensive line, no matter who you are. But, yeah, the problems have been injuries. The problem has been pass defense, inconsistent pass rush. They've certainly gotten a lot better against the run. I don't know if it's a scheme thing. I don't know if it's a motivation thing. I don't know if it's a recruiting thing. Their talent level is extraordinarily high. Tom Herman has put together, I think last year was a top 5 class, top 10 class. So, even though I don't even love their offensive coordinator, I can't argue with the results from their offense. I think it's been a defense and health thing, but I think 2 years ago they had a top 10, 12 defense. There's nothing about me that's fully freaking out about major staffing changes with Texas right now. I understand the direction's not great. I understand that this year was looked at as we are going to grow on the Sugar Bowl win over Georgia last year. We're
right.
going to build on that. They haven't done that.
They've not done that. They've had injuries.
But everybody has injuries.
Everyone has injuries, and we should really reserve the right to come back and answer this question in the post-Sam Ellinger era.
Yeah.
Sam Ellinger has papered over a lot. Let's come back and talk after he's gone, midway through the year, and we'll see what happens.
I'm willing to do that.
Final one here. I'm going to cut out TCU because I threw that on just for the hell of it. I don't know okay. if either one of us wants to be Moana at TCU.
No, I'm okay.
What about Virginia Tech? Last
one. We've spilled enough purple blood on this show.
Yeah. Virginia Tech.
Okay, this one's interesting to me. So they're going to hire a new defensive coordinator or promote. I don't know. Maybe it's already been announced what's happening there. But Bud Foster's done. I believe he's getting a statue, as he should. Mm-hmm. They've had quarterback issues basically every year. It's been sort of patchwork. And now finally, it seems like, and sometimes patchwork good, sometimes patchwork not so good. It seems like they have a dude in Hendon Hooker.
It feels like they're trending in a good direction, doesn't it?
Yeah, they fully embarrassed themselves against Duke. They've recruited, they've been, what, a top 4 or 5 team recruiting-wise in the ACC. The defense hasn't been great, but they have an opportunity to, as old people should be doing with their routers, just relax and reboot. That's what they're doing. I think they're going to be okay. And they're not—they're definitely not going to pay Justin Fuente $15 million away. They're not doing that.
So maybe to a lesser degree, Moana with the defense.
Yeah, but they're hiring somebody new. That's already—it's been decided. This isn't me going out on any sort of limb.
It's already baked into the cake.
Yeah. So
I agree with you.
We know we're Moana.
I think I'm with you here.
Okay.
All right. So we're Moana with a couple schools here. Certainly Michigan State and USC.
And they just don't lose to Virginia.
Yeah.
They could win the Coastal.
South Carolina.
They might be the favorite to win the Coastal.
Northwestern to some extent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll play one more time just for inspiration out there. If you're in the car with the kids.
Was this like did this do something to your brain that other recent Disney or Pixar movies haven't done?
I listened to an episode of My Brother and Me.
Okay.
I believe, and I could be mistaken, at least 2 of the 3 hosts have kids. I do not. But
they all do. I think all
of them. Do they all have them now? Okay.
Yeah.
At one point, one of the McElroy brothers talked about how this is the kind of movie that you watch with your kids and then you find yourself at some inopportune time screaming out, "I am Moana." And I don't have kids. I just have a dog.
Right.
But I found myself after watching this feeling that deep need to just, just get it out, you know?
Really?
Yeah. So this movie touched me very deep inside. And since we are going with the Two's Cruise and nautical theme here, I figured, why not?
Yeah. It didn't do that for me. I thought it was fine. I haven't thought about it that much since.
It took me weeks of trying to figure out how we could work this into a college football podcast. But I did it. I feel like I'd done it.
I'm a Coco guy. I am a Wall-E. I'm a Ratatouille.
Wall-E, very underrated.
I skew in that direction. Okay, real quick, because we are in this mode of everybody trying to figure out who the best 4 teams are. We don't need to figure out who the best 4 teams are, but we can figure out tiers and we can figure out who the most venomous, who the most dangerous, who is our ringed blue octopi, who are our octopi.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What is that creature? What is that?
So it is a very small octopus that has enough venom. It's found between Australia and Tokyo in the Pacific and Indian Oceans, or Japan, that it has enough venom in its body to kill up to 26 humans per my very quick
Holy
research.
Crap.
And okay. It is very beautiful. So who is your beautiful venomous team or teams that exist in college football right now? Who has that 5 to 8 inches of fury? I am leaving that in the show. Obviously, I think Ohio State and LSU.
Yes.
Where we can consider octopi, beautiful and venomous.
Yes.
Is somebody that lethal and beautiful after those 2 teams?
Clemson. Clemson.
See, to me,
Clemson they haven't been as flashy this year, but I think on a big stage is when you're going to see it. And I know that's a leap of faith, but
right, they do this every year.
They do this every year.
Somebody, yeah,
yeah.
Maybe even lose a game. Syracuse, Pitt, somebody like that. See, I think I have them as more of an orca type. I know I didn't give you that option.
Okay.
Like they come play again with their food. They're an apex predator, but sometimes they're a little too smart for their own good. They like playing with their food and drawing out the excellence.
Okay. Well, Fine. So you're saying a team that just kills you right away, or
yes,
a team that wounds you deeply and plays with you until you eventually arrive at a tortured
you bleed
death.
Out. Correct. And like, if you want to say Great White Shark or something like that, fine, for LSU, Ohio State, even Alabama, the best of Alabama.
Right.
That's how they win. But I like the ringed blue octopi. The blue ringed,
ringed blue octopi octopus. Yeah.
I think it's blue ringed. Yes.
Blue ringed. I think Ohio State and LSU are in that class. And before some of the issues we've seen, if you want to say mm-hmm. that, with Oklahoma, they kind of felt in that class as well. But certainly after losing to K-State, you can't say it. They almost lost this past week to Iowa State. So they're no longer in that class.
Well, Oklahoma's still sustaining damage.
They are.
When they're scoring 58, they're winning 58-29.
Sure,
you know,
sure, sure, sure.
Like repeated small attacks a la Piranha. I'm going to put Georgia and Oregon both in that category. Ultimately, pretty deadly. It's not the blunt force. It's not the huge sting. Both of those teams grinding it out. Not a lot of success downfield all the time, although Lawrence Cager has changed that 1.5 times a game for Georgia. But that's how that's my equation for those two teams. I don't think they have the apex excellence.
No, I mean,
that the others do.
And Georgia is probably a really good example of that. A lot of paper cuts. A lot of paper cuts when you play Georgia.
Yeah.
They're very fundamentally sound. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good on defense. A great quarterback in Jake Fromm. Not a ton of chances down the field. Not a ton of explosiveness, though they have explosive players.
Mm-hmm.
It just is an offense that feels very close to the vest. And look no further than the game we saw last week against Missouri. 27-0. Just a lot of like underwhelming stuff on offense. Very good on defense. But I think I'm with you. You would know Oregon better than me.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've seen of the Ducks, I think it fits.
They're evolving. I think they're going to be throwing it more and more. And I think Justin Herbert might even be like keeping it or running himself more and more rather than the sort of grind that they've turned to of offense. But yeah, ultimately, I think there's a lot of that wrapped into their identity.
Okay. Where do we come down on schools like Minnesota, on schools like Baylor? Yeah.
Glad you asked. Seemingly small, maybe even cute or cool story in Minnesota. Get them as a lionfish. Not deadly, but they'll bite. They'll sting. They'll do some damage.
I was really impressed by what we saw out of Minnesota this past week. And I know we sort of differ. Our opinion differs on how excited we should or shouldn't be after that Penn State win. But
you have them banishing Penn State to all damnation for all eternity. That they don't deserve to play football anymore. I think Penn State, I thought it was competitive.
I just thought they completely outclassed Penn State.
Okay.
And certainly in the first half, the offense was near perfect in the first half.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Second
no
half.
No doubt about it.
No doubt about it. Do the McElroy thing, right? Like,
yeah.
No doubt about it. But second half, they played a little bit more ball control. They tried to run the clock. We know what happens to a lot of teams when you try to play that style of offense. It can come back to bite you. Honestly,
dropped it twice real quick.
Yeah. This is true. I just came away very impressed by Minnesota. I still do not think that they're playoff worthy. But
okay.
But we've got games yet on the schedule against Iowa and against Wisconsin, excuse me.
So can they do anything to those teams in victory? Go through this season unscathed, 12-0. Can they do anything to make you feel like they will hang around with or edge out Ohio State? If Ohio State is the team that ends up, which I think they will in the Big Ten championship game. Like, can they become what Northwestern was in the first half last year? Can they become what Wisconsin was a couple years ago? I don't know what I can, like, if they beat Wisconsin or Iowa, like 48-10?
I think it would have to be a situation where they scored like 50 points against Wisconsin, something like that. Because
yeah.
I don't think... Maybe Penn State, although I probably shouldn't use Penn State as an example because Minnesota threw all over them. But I'm just trying to think of another defense that's going to go up against Ohio State that I feel confident can contain them. The offense is just so good right now. They're so good on both sides of the ball, really. But offensively, they're so good. I don't know if there's another defense out there that can really contain them. And what I would need to see from Minnesota or really any team that can beat Ohio State is the ability to score a lot of points. A lot of points quickly.
Sure.
And we saw flashes of that against Penn State, certainly in the passing game, 17 yards per pass for Tanner Morgan.
So how much closer is Minnesota to Penn State, to the class of the Big Ten, winning the Big Ten, based solely on the Penn State game? Are they dramatically, are they appreciably closer to beating Penn State 35-31 in Indianapolis? Or
Ohio State 35-31.
Excuse me. With the result that happened already, Penn State lost to Minnesota. Is Minnesota appreciably closer in your mind because of that win to Ohio State?
I would say yes, and here's why.
Okay.
Oftentimes, when you've got a team like a Minnesota who, you know, through no fault of their own, has not played anybody so far this season, there is this...
They played Penn State now.
They played Penn State now. But before Penn State, they hadn't played anybody. There is always sort of this notion that it's smoke and mirrors, or that they're doing it and they're getting lucky. And honestly, kind of a little bit like what we're seeing going on with Baylor. That did not happen at all against Penn State. They came in, they were loaded for bear. Optimal situation for them at home, big game. It's a lot working in their favor, but nothing of that win felt like it was smoke and mirrors. So yeah, in that sense, I do feel like they're closer to maybe contending with a team like Ohio State. I still don't think they can beat them, but I was very impressed by that win.
Will what Penn State looks like moving forward characterize your view of Minnesota?
Probably yes.
So they finish with Indiana, Ohio State, Rutgers. If Indiana's really close, if they sneak by Indiana, if they get the doors blown off of them in Columbus,
then yes.
That game,
yes.
41-17.
Yes.
All of a sudden, you're downgrading Minnesota.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. I think that's fair.
But still an incredible
year. I really like the Minnesota story.
An incredible year.
Yeah. It's just, you know, that's a tough hang. Ohio State's a tough hang.
It is. Anybody else we want to make mention of here?
Yeah. Let's make mention of Utah. Because Utah has the defense and they have the quarterback. And that's something at least I've talked about as being, that does it for me. That seduces me. If you have a combination of defense and quarterback, then you are a serious playoff team. They lose in wonky fashion on the road to USC, but otherwise, you know, they didn't play really anybody in the non-conference portion of their schedule. But they've looked very strong against teams that they should look very strong against. So I have them sort of, they're laying in wait, maybe a little bit disguised. People are forgetting about them. Little stonefish that looks like the seafloor. Poisonous, Ty. Poisonous. How seriously should we be taking Utah right now? Because that's a good combination. And I don't know what Tyler Huntley's leg health is right now, but they're just comfortably beating everybody. They're leaving no doubt. And I'm impressed by that. And they play at altitude, which is another tough
thing. They do play at altitude.
How seriously should we be taking Utah?
I think pretty seriously. And my question to you was how you feel Oregon against Utah, if that is the eventual Pac-12 championship game.
Right. I think Oregon probably has the edge because I think they're a little bit more complete outside of, I guess, offensive skill. I don't love Utah's collection of running backs and receivers, but I don't love Oregon's.
Zach Moss breaking all sorts of records.
Yeah, I think the best of Justin Herbert might still be the better than the best of Tyler Huntley, but Tyler Huntley's had a better year. So I would, on a neutral field, I think Oregon will travel well for that game. So I think I give a slight edge to Oregon, but I think it's 1A, 1B to me.
I think it's a really good football game if they play.
Utah closes out with UCLA, Arizona, Colorado. I don't see a threat there. So Utah conceivably would beat an 11-1 Oregon team if they went out, and same goes for Oregon, an 11-1 team.
No. No, I think Utah
is real dangerous.
Is very dangerous. I'm not looking past the UCLA game, though. And we'll talk more about it.
That's this week, right?
We'll talk more about it. Not looking past that one quite yet.
Right. Okay.
But I like Utah. I like Utah a lot. All right. Daniel, we have droned on for more than an hour now.
Oh my God, let's stop.
Most of it to the tune of I Am Moana. So thank you.
Duck Ho Chihuahua? Is that what we're...
Well, that's what you're calling it. Ugh. I'm sticking with I Am Moana. People can weigh in. SolidVerbal@gmail.com. They can tweet us. They can send us Facebook messages or Instagram messages. Signal messages. messages, 408-VERBAL-1, if you've got such an app on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Any which way, contact us. Let us know what you think. Thank you for listening to our Twos Cruise. Ahoy! Here on The Verbal, my voice is all out of juice, Dan.
Great. You left it all on the field. You got digital audio field.
Any parting shots here?
No, that's all I have. That's everything. I'm spent.
I am as well. Thank you so much to everyone out there for listening to the Twos Cruise. We will be back on Thursday to preview all the Week 12 action. In the meantime, for that guy over there, Lieutenant Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Captain Ty Hildebrandt. Talk to you soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.